Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the brand new Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Happy to be in here with you today on this beautiful Monday. The Royals and the Tigers set to rumble later today out at Kauffman Stadium. Speaking of Kauffman Stadium, we had Denny Matthews, the Hall of Fame voice of the Kansas City Royals. He was on the show earlier today. Here's what Denny had to say about Salvador Perez and a potential Hall of Famer.
Possible. He's going to have to play a few more years and productively. But, he's headed in that direction. Now, can he sustain it? And that'd be the big question. But right now he's on the outside looking in, but he's still got a ways to go, hopefully, if he can stay healthy, put together some good years, some good productive years over the next four or five. Well, I'd say he has a legit shot.
Excuse me. We talk about this because Salvi is approaching double-digit appearances in the All-Star game. He is also really close to having eight or more All-Star starts, not just appearances. Salvi right now has a chance to start once again for the All-Star game. So to give you a comparison, Pudge Rodriguez was selected to the All-Star game 14 times and was the starter 12 times. Yogi Berra, he had 18 appearances in the Major League Baseball All-Star game and had 11 starts. Right now, Salvi has been to the All-Star game 7 times and has six starts. This year, he is going to make the All-Star team, so that would give him 8 appearances and 7 starts at catcher. The conversation of Salvador Perez being a Hall of Famer is not a premature one, and I don't really think we're that far off from it. We're probably, what, 2 seasons away? If Salvi gets to double-digit appearances in the All-Star game, if you look at the people who have done that before in Major League Baseball history and they've been clean players, you make the Hall of Fame. Like, I'm sitting here looking at it right now, and I'm looking at guys who have just done, they've been to the All-Star game double-digit times. And if we're talking about guys in recent memory, we're talking about guys like Ichiro, Ricky Henderson, Ken Griffey Jr., Roberto Alomar, Mariano Rivera, Wade Boggs, Manny Ramirez, that unless you've been a quote-unquote dirty player, if you go to the All-Star game double-digit times, you're going to the Hall of Fame. We're not really that far off from, I think, Salvi being as close to a lock as one can be. You know I'm big on accolades and things that you accomplish over the course of your career, and whenever somebody has to stand in front of the committee and make your argument, do you have a lot of accolades to throw behind your name and a lot of bullet points? Like, we all watch ESPN, and then when they show in the bottom left corner who you are, what does it say? For Salvi, it could say double-digit All-Star, he started 8 or 9 times, World Series MVP. Salvi's going to have a lot of accolades and superlatives, and that goes aside from the Gold Gloves and Silver Slugger awards that he's amassed over his time in Major League Baseball. Rob, I think we're about 24 months away from being able to put Salvi into Cooperstown. I don't think he's that far off from it.
I would agree. I think what's going to happen to Salvi will be fascinating because I would presume, and I'm about, let me rephrase that. Yadier Molina is going to retire before Salvador Perez. That's pretty much a foregone conclusion. He's 38 years old. He's going to retire. He has more gold gloves, and he will trend toward his 10th All-Star game this season if he makes this season's All-Star game. And his awards are comparable to Salvi's. He's missing a couple of Silver Sluggers, and he's missing the World Series MVP. But you can make an argument that Yadier Molina is a better defensive catcher than Salvador Perez. The reason I bring up Yadier Molina is that he will retire before Perez. If he gets in, may not first ballot, may not second ballot, but if Yadier Molina makes the Hall of Fame, which I believe he will because of all the things he's done in his career outside of hitting the baseball, then Salvador Perez absolutely will make it because Perez has all the same accomplishments or will by the end of his career that Yadier Molina has, plus will have a better offensive career than Molina, assuming he keeps on this trajectory. So Royals fans need to keep an eye on Yadier Molina. If Yadier Molina doesn't get in, I think the case for Perez gets much, much harder to make. But once Molina's in, I think Perez is kind of a foregone conclusion.
You would know this more than me. Is anybody arguing that Yadier Molina isn't going to make it? Like, I don't really see what the argument of Yadi not making it would be. Sometimes you have to factor in the team. So he's played for a model franchise in the St. Louis Cardinals. Sitting here looking at it. He has made the All-Star team 9 times. He's been a part of 2 World Series. He's won the Gold Glove 9 times and has a Silver Slugger. He's a career 280 hitter, has over 2,000 hits. And by the time he's done, he'll probably have 1,000 RBIs and maybe hit like 175 home runs. Who's arguing that Yadier Molina isn't going to be a Hall of Famer? Like, this just seems like one of those weird, real super inside baseball arguments that people are going to make, that they'll argue war and stats that just the casual baseball fan just simply doesn't understand. Who's arguing that Yadi isn't going to be a Hall of Famer? I think he's a surefire Hall of Famer. So if we're using Yadi as the benchmarker where, okay, maybe Yadi doesn't get in the first try, but let's say he gets in the third try, then Salvi should feel really good about his chances, and he should. So Yadi's been to the All-Star game 9 times. Salvi's been there 6. We think he's going back for 7th this year. He's won an All-Star, a World Series MVP. He's won the Gold Glove 5 times. He's won Silver Slugger 3 times. He's the better offensive player, I think, out of those 2 players. If we're using Yadi as the case study of, okay, if this player gets in, that means really good for you, then I think the Salvi case is even stronger than because of Molina.
I looked it up because I remember this was a big Twitter hot button issue a couple of years ago on Twitter.com. And I remember Jeff passed me this point, and I went up and I found his tweet. And this tweet is from 2018, so for what it's worth, some of these stats could change, but it's worth noting. Here was his point about Molina. He said, Molina will probably make the Hall of Fame, but his case is not as good as everyone believes because of the defense and the pitching staff and the framing. He will get in because of the writers, but he did make the point that his resume is not as good as people believe. He points out, first and foremost, rings are nice, no doubt, but they shouldn't be the end-all be-all. 2, All-Star game appearances do not equal excellence. The All-Star game is a popularity contest. Once you're in, you're kind of in the group. He made that same point about Gold Glove. The Gold Glove is a lot about reputation, not about pure excellence. How many times have we as Royals fans been like, Lorenzo Cain was the best defensive center fielder in baseball. All the metrics say so, but he didn't win a Gold Glove. It's a little bit of reputation, which helped Molina stack him up. Catchers are very underrepresented in the Hall of Fame, so it wouldn't surprise me if they keep not putting catchers in. And finally, these are the numbers. Molina's career OPS is meh, his OPS plus is below average, and his OBP is pretty mediocre for his career. Those are things that would also apply to Salvador Perez, although his numbers are better. The OBP part is definitely applies to Perez. But I think Molina's going to get in. There's a case to be made for him not to get in, but he's going to get in. And once he's in, Perez will be in after him. Those are probably the next 2 catchers to get in the Hall of Fame, in my opinion.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. To me, it's kind of the same argument about tight end. Like, there's not that many tight ends in the Hall of Fame. I know it's a cross-sport comparison, but I think there's 9 tight ends in the Hall of Fame. So it typically has been a very difficult position for you to go to the Hall of Fame. But the position is changing in a way where Kelsey's numbers are going to put him in. Gronk's numbers are going to put him in. I think at some point we can have a conversation about a couple of other guys, like Zach Ertz at some point. Like, is he a guy who's going to emerge to a point where we have a conversation about him? But I just think we see positions are changing. So catcher, you're right, has typically been a very difficult position for you to go into. But I would say there's 4 potentially playing right now in baseball. Yadier Molina, Salvador Perez, Joe Mauer, and Buster Posey.
Joe Mauer's not in baseball anymore.
Oh, he's not. My bad.
But Joe Mauer will be a Hall of Famer, I imagine. That's a good point. The text line was going to say Buster Posey is probably going to be a Hall of Famer. That's a good point. I forgot about those two. I agree that Salvador Perez and Yadier Molina will go in. I probably would put Buster Posey will go in because of his offense. Joe Mauer will go in because of his offense, too. Those are both a little bit different case studies because the amount of first base and DH they played at the end of their careers, respectively. So I think they're in a little bit of different category where I think Perez and Molina are lifers behind the plate. Those two got some run at other positions. But I'm not making the case for Molina. I'm just stating that Jeff Pettit and his numbers alone don't indicate Hall of Famer, but he's going to get in for all the reasons we believe he's going to get in.
I mean, if we're arguing Posey's credentials, and what are we doing?
No,
like, not
Posey's
you, but
in.
I'm saying is like if anybody's arguing Posey's, he won MVP as a catcher. Like, Buster Posey's going into the Hall of Fame. Like, there's four catchers from this era and this generation that I think should all easily go into Cooperstown, so we'll see what that means. Coming up on the other side, there were a lot of crazy news stories that popped up this weekend. We'll do a special edition of Meanwhile in the News. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Meanwhile, in the news.
I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story, and I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
I've got some good news for you and some potentially upsetting news.
You're a f***ing newsman. Did I ever tell you otherwise? You punch me in the face.
The Drive Witness News.
I want to tell you guys a true story first. Rob, I want you to step up to the microphone. I don't know what you're doing back there, but I want you to focus for the next like 3 to 5 minutes of this show. There was a kid. His name is Marcus Scott. He's a 4-star football player. He was headed to Louisiana State University to play football, right? But you know what happened? A football power asked him to come on an official visit. They took him around to places like Shakespeare's Pizza. You know what I mean? Just wanted him to get a vibe and a feeling of the culture of the city. Took him to, you know, see the facilities. And you know what that 4-star recruit said to himself? I don't want to go to LSU to play football anymore. I want to go to Missouri. I'm going to tell you a quick stat, Rob, really quickly. This should start off meanwhile in the news. Missouri's football class, Rob, has 9 kids committed. 4 of them are 4-star kids. Hospital is under new management here. Eli Drinkwitz is doing something that no Missouri coach has ever done before. You guys thought you could count out Missouri, didn't you? Oh, I saw it, Rob. I saw it on your face. You thought you could count out the Missouri Tigers. Last season was just the beginning. Eli Drinkwitz, for a team that all of you left for dead, let's point that out. Every single one of you left Missouri out for dead last season. They went 5-5 last year. They beat LSU in a football game last year. You guys told me that would never be possible at Mizzou. And you know what they're doing, Rob? They're putting together a recruiting class that right now is top 15 in the nation. Oh, I'm not thinking about just competing in the SEC. You know what I'm thinking about? Being a part of the college football playoff. That's in the future for the Missouri Tigers and Eli Drinkwitz. You know what's happening right now? Recruiting momentum is happening. We're getting top 10 kids to show up now for official visits. This is a new day. Hospital is under new management. That's story one, and meanwhile in the news, Rob.
Okay, I will say something nice about Missouri here.
Because there ain't nothing else to say.
I saw on Friday night they got that big transfer, a Caleb Evans, the cornerback from Tulsa. He agreed to go to Missouri. He had offers from Georgia, Notre Dame, and Texas, and he chose Missouri. That's a good one-year transfer portal win for Eli Drinkwitz. But I don't want Mizzou fans to get too high and mighty. None of these kids in the next class have signed anything. They're all just verbals. We know how the verbal game is played. I remember once, it was spring of, I believe, 2016. Kansas had a top 20 recruiting football class because they had all those Louisiana kids show up and verbally commit. What happened? Nothing. They all left. They all stunk. It happens okay. In this time of year. They verbal. Let them sign, then you can get excited.
I just want to point out that one of the kids that gave you a verbal was Najee Harris.
I know.
He was never going to the University of Kansas. You know that. Someone said it sounds like Mizzou is handing out bags of cash. Finally! Any issues with that?
About
so you're time. Telling me that Missouri is recruiting at a level in which they should be recruiting? Because now they're out paying for kids? I mean this in all seriousness. This is not a joke. This is all you need to do as a college athletic recruiter. You have to make 18 to 22-year-old kids believe that coming to your university is cool. It's always been about that. There's never been a time in which it has not been cool to play basketball at Kansas, right? Back when it was cool to play football at Kansas, they were getting high-level recruits to do it. It has never been cool, for whatever reason, it has never been cool to live in St. Louis and play football at Mizzou. Not at a really high level. Sure, you'll always get some kids that want to stay home. They want to stay in state. You will always get some of those kids. But right now, they're getting them at a pace they've never gotten them before. Step one for any college football program, more so than in basketball, is to somewhat close in the borders. Pinkel understood that. Pinkel did really good in Kansas City, really good in St. Louis, and he found his pockets in Texas in which he could really thrive and then turn those kids. But think about this. If Pinkel could have been getting 4-star and 5-star kids instead of turning 2- and 3-star kids and NFL players, how different could it have gone? I've always made this point about Mizzou. When Mizzou's had really good football teams, they just always hit their head on a team that just clearly had more talent than they do. And the talent starts with the caliber of high school athlete that you can recruit. Oklahoma's getting better high school players than Missouri. Texas is getting better high school players than Missouri. We know that's the case in the SEC. What if you could close the gap between high school players? So step one, Rob, is getting the verbal. Like getting them to tweet out, I am committed, and then get them actively engaged in helping to get other kids there. But I'll give Eli Drinkwitz a lot of credit because at least right now, I think what a big thing is in pushing the momentum forward is he's made it cool to go to Mizzou. And if that's the case, if it can be deemed to be cool for Missouri with the amount of high-level kids that come out of Kansas City and St. Louis, you can create a strong program at Missouri. Are you ever going to be Oklahoma? No. Are you ever going to be Clemson or Alabama or Ohio State? No. But could Missouri be Wisconsin? Sure. Every 3, every 4 years, Missouri could have a special group of kids that could win 10 games. I think they're building something like that right now. Obviously, you got to prove it on the field. You got to go win. You got to do all those things. But with the talent that they're getting right now, they got a chance to do something here in 2 or 3 years.
I don't know why, but is every single fan base of every single college that isn't on that top echelon, why do they all think, I want to be Wisconsin? Because as a Kansas fan, I feel the same way. Obviously, Kansas in super hard times. I understand that I'm not comparing Kansas to Missouri. Missouri's better than Kansas right now. But like a part of me is like, God, I wish Kansas was just Wisconsin and the down year was 6-6 and the pinnacle was 10 wins and you're on like a 5-year cycle and it's fantastic and you ebb where everyone flows with your offense. Missouri fans want to be Wisconsin. I bet if you ask K-State fans, hey, if you could be any program, they say Wisconsin. What is it Wisconsin does that every program wants to be Wisconsin? It confuses me to no end.
I think everybody wants to be Wisconsin for this reason. Wisconsin doesn't really have some great geographic advantage, but yet are a really strong athletic department with great fan support. Like, when you think about it, there's some, like, I don't care how good Kansas can be in football, right? Like, whatever you think the ceiling is, they're never going to be a tier one team in college football. Like, that's just the way that it goes. I would say that Wisconsin has maximized what they can be. They'll never be Ohio State. They probably won't be Michigan. They probably won't be Penn State. But can they always be between a 6-10 win program? Like, there haven't been many years that you and I have cheered for or watched college athletics that Wisconsin wasn't at least relevant, at least good. I think that's because, like, I've always argued for basketball. No, it's different now because of what Baylor's turned into. But for the longest time, I was thinking to myself, why can't Missouri be Baylor? Like, Baylor before the last 2 years, they'd go on a run every once in a while. They weren't getting high-end recruits, but they would always finish in the top 3 to 5 of the Big 12. And they were just always, fine. Why couldn't Missouri be Baylor? Now I'm looking at their college football program and thinking, I'd love for them to be Wisconsin. I actually think they were trending toward being Wisconsin whenever they had Pinkel in the Big 12. That's kind of what they were. And then they switched conferences and it hasn't really got rolling the way that it think it's rolling. Right now, I think it's rolling. They have 9 kids committed to Mizzou. 4 of them are 4-star kids. They're in the mix right now for one of the 10 best high school football players in the country. You can't really ask for recruiting to go much better than it's going right now if you're a program like Mizzou.
All right, someone on the text line says, you should be Iowa football. Iowa football isn't better. Iowa football is in this same vein. I'm not going to get into this big argument about this. Wisconsin's been better than Iowa the last 10 years. So thanks for texting in, Kling. But Wisconsin is better than Iowa football. But yes,
yeah, I agree.
Iowa football is in this same vein. And it seems like Missouri's closer to it than Kansas, obviously, but there's a lot of schools where you look at enviously and you think you should be able to do it better than them. Iowa City's fun. I think Columbia around St. Louis is a better geographical advantage. Madison is a fun time. You got a geographical advantage because of St. Louis versus Milwaukee as far as recruiting kids. I would say, I know North Carolina's in the South, but is North Carolina's pulling in a top 25 team pretty consistently with Mack Brown, who's aging and decrepit. Why isn't Missouri doing at least that or better? It does confuse me, but I'm happy Missouri is getting a lot of verbals early going. That's nice for them. I'm happy for them.
Coming up in a little bit, we'll get back to some pro sports, and we'll talk about Patrick Mahomes coming up in just a little bit. Another story that I want to share with you guys comes from NBC. So NBC, this is always what happens in the summer, is they start doing sweeps, just random filler television. Like, now's the time where I find myself watching Celebrity Family Feud just randomly because there's nothing else on television. Like, I was watching a couple days ago, Rob, they had Terrence Howard against Rob Lowe's family. And I'm sitting there on the edge of my seat wondering if Rob Lowe's kids are good at Family Feud, right? So they're doing a show called Ultimate Slip and Slide. Ultimate Slip and Slide. They had to cancel the production of the show because of an outbreak. There was a parasite outbreak that, when swallowed, causes a diarrhea disease. So they had people out here absolutely struggling as they were doing this slip and slide show. Rob, you know my theory. All of us just have a random no-nonsense show that we watch. You always call it a palate cleanser. All of us have a palate cleanser. Like, I remember one day I was like randomly flipping through the channels and I stopped on Wipeout and I'm sitting there watching Wipeout. I'm like, what is enjoyable about this show? Like, I didn't really understand it. But then I was watching Ultimate Ninja Warrior and I was like, I love this show. I would say we all have one of those kind of shows that we like. Like, I'm a Ultimate Ninja Warrior guy. Like, if it's on television, I will watch. I'll stop and I'll watch at least a few people run through the gauntlet on Ultimate Ninja Warrior. I would also say we all have one of those Ice Truckers, Bar Rescue, Pawn Stars. We all have one of those kind of shows that's in our arsenal too. Every single person listening, there's one of those kind of shows you're like, I love this show. Now, you guys know me. I love my Bar Rescue, and I love Pawn Stars. I love Pawn Stars, who just always has a guy. Like, it doesn't matter what you have. Like, you can have a nuclear bomb or a first edition Harry Potter, and they will bring in somebody to tell you exactly how much it's worth. I really have a great appreciation for that show.
I'm trying to think what my show is, because I like Ninja Warrior a lot. I really do like Ninja Warrior. Those talent shows don't do it for me. I know people who like love America's Got Talent or X Factor or whatever. Those don't do it for me. It's probably Ninja Warrior. I'm not going to lie. I really like Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives with Guy Fieri. I love that show. I don't know what it is. I know it's corny. I know it's cheesy. I know he's annoying with his bleach blonde hair. I love that show. That's how I feel about the way you feel about Bar Rescue. That's how I feel about Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. It's a fantastic show.
I kind of feel that way towards Chopped. Now, I don't watch Chopped very often, but whenever I watch Chopped, I come away thinking, this show's pretty good. Like, I'll watch this. I like Chopped. Chop's not a show that I watch pretty frequently. Like, I watch Bar Rescue frequently. I watch Pawn Stars kind of frequently. I don't watch Chopped very often. Like, I've seen a couple episodes of Diners, Drives, and whatever. You know the show I'm talking
Triple
about.
Triple D.
You know the show I'm talking about. But whenever I see it, I'm like, you know what? This show's kind of fun. Coming up on the other side, we'll talk about Patrick Mahomes, who once again could be on the cover of Madden. And Andrew Benintendi has found his way onto the disabled list. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back to 610 Sports Radio, the official broadcast partner of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Your national cash contest code word for 4 o'clock is scale. S-C-A-L-E, scale. S-C-A-L-E, scale. Text that to 72881 and you can be the $1,000 winner in the national cash contest. The code word is scale. S-C-A-L-E, text scale to 72881. I want to read to you guys the Royals lineup for the day, because I think the Royals lineup right now with Andrew Benintendi on the injury list goes to tell us everything that we need to know. Like, sometimes I get called negative on this show, and I used to be Hope Harrison. I'm not saying I'm still not Hope Harrison. Like, I still think the Royals are going to win 77 games around there. But I also think we got to be realistic about what the Royals are and what they ain't. And you are asking this team to really tread a lot of water with some pretty clear deficiencies. Like, their team hasn't been able to get consistent starting pitching for now almost 3 months. Remember, Rob, the stat earlier where the average pitcher for the Royals went 3 2/3 inning? That was the average length of a start for the Royals. That has not gotten that much better between the almost the end of June, we're not the middle part of June, at the very beginning of the season. So starting pitching depth and quality of starts has been an issue this entire season for the Royals. Right now, they're incredibly banged up, that when they were mostly healthy at the beginning of the season, you were able to mask some of your deficiencies by just sheer volume. Today's lineup is bad. Your 1, 2, and 3 are your three best hitters. It is then an absolute wasteland after that. So today's lineup is Merrifield, Santana, Perez. This is where it gets dicey. Soler, Dozier, Gutierrez, Olivares, Alberto, Taylor. Rob, you watch way more baseball than I do. Their 4-9 is one of the worst in baseball right now. There's not a proven run producer. You have two guys who have been mostly bad this season in Dozier and Soler, and then four other guys who just haven't proven to be consistent major league offensive players in Gutierrez, Olivares, Hanser Alberto, and Michael A. Taylor. You're asking a lot, I would say, from a rotation that hasn't been very consistent. Maybe you were expecting to get some punch from a lot of the young guys coming up here, the Daniel Lynch's, the Jackson Coart, and those guys just haven't given you that extra push that maybe you needed to get you over the hump. So you haven't gotten that. The injuries are really starting to take a toll on this team. So no Mondesi right now, not really that much of a shock. No Andrew Benintendi right now. So a couple of your key run producers that you're counting on. And then I would say in the bullpen, I think their bullpen's good. That's probably the strength of this team. But their bullpen isn't great enough to overcome the bad starts that they get, I would say, twice a month. There's just a lot of things wrong with this team right now in terms of being an over 500 team and making a deep run. Could they still continue to tread water and still be competitive and play meaningful games between now and the end of the season? I still think that's very much in play. But I think this Benintendi injury kind of goes with a lot of the other things we've seen the last 3 weeks. Their margin for error is just you have to be near perfect. And that's just not how the season's breaking together for the Royals.
Yeah, I would say this is one of the worst lineups among teams that are actually trying or at least believe they can compete this season. Because there are lineups that I think are worse right now. I think the Orioles lineup is probably much, much worse. And the Rangers lineup is probably much, much worse. And if you're going to go the National League side, then probably the Pirates have one of the worst lineups in baseball. But those teams came into the season thinking to themselves, we're playing for the number one overall pick. They didn't come out and say it, but those teams are tanking. They're playing the long game. They're not playing the short game. The Royals, at least internally, and have talked about all year, believe they are a team that can win and win now. Now, the media and people who follow the team and the team itself can differ on what a level of winning looks like for this club, but they at least believe they can win. If you believe you can win, you can't have roster positions, what, 4 or maybe 5 through 9 in a lineup on every night just be a problem. We can't be saying, well, the Orioles are worse, but they're in the same ballpark. Probably the Marlins lineup is worse, but it's in the same ballpark. We can't be having those conversations for a team that believes it can be winning. And this one, the text line points out the team they're playing today, the Tigers, will be worse. Yeah, the Tigers stink and are trying to be horrible. So we talked about Vern's biggest questions going into the season were Mondesi, Dozier, and Soler. Some of those questions are starting to be answered by in bad ways right now. This lineup tonight is putrid.
No, this lineup today is not very good. So I went and I did this. I looked up a random year with the Royals. So I'm in 2005 right now. I am 2005, June 14th. Which lineup do you think is better? I'm going to read you today's lineup again, and then I'll go through the 2005 lineup on the exact same day. So what's 16 years apart? All right. Merrifield, Santana, Perez, and then 4-9. Dozier, Soler, Gutierrez, Olivares, Hanser Alberto, Michael A. Taylor. Back in 2005, this was their lineup. Angel Barroa, David DeJesus, Mike Sweeney, Matt Stairs, Terrence Long, Mark Tien, Shane Costa, John Buck, Ruben Gauthier. Well, that was their lineup back in 2005. Now, 1-3 is better on this year's Royals team. I don't know if 4-9 is that much different than it was in 2005 right now. I don't know if it's that much different between Matt Stairs, Terrence Long, Mark Tien, Shane Costa, John Buck, and Ruben Gauthier than the 4-9 they're trotting out there today.
At least for this Royals team, the veteran guys, you know, your Solaires, your Michael A. Taylors, I'm trying to think who else in the lineup tonight that would be considered a veteran, aren't decrepit like Terrence Long and Matt Stairs were. All right. There's a difference between a veteran player and a guy who has to put his walker on the bench to go out there and take an at bat. That 05 Royals team won 56 games. We can be down on this lineup, and we should, because it's not good. It's not 05-06 bad. Now, pull up the 2010 lineup, we can have a conversation.
All right, hold on. I'll pull it up. You keep talking, I'll pull it up.
That 2010 team was probably what? They're like a 74, 72 win team. I think that was 2010, 2011. That one of those teams was like 70 plus wins. That's probably comparable, and we can have a conversation.
Okay, I'll pull it up. Hold on. You keep talking. I'll pull it up. I'm pulling up the game log right now. I'm going to go to June 14th, and we're going to see the lineup that they put out there back in 2010 and see if it's any better.
I would say it's comparable. Maybe 2010's a slight bit worse because 1-2-3 for this Royals team is good. But, man, it's mean to compare any Royals team to 05 or 06.
Okay, that's okay. I get what you're saying. All right, I'm pulling it up
Special
here.
Special brand of bad. I believe that was Emil Brown's team, wasn't that when he had the incident in the locker room or the clubhouse? I mean, let's not do this Royals team. We can be insulting and
okay,
point out some
ready?
Facts. I'm ready. Fire away.
Right,
I filled right. the time.
All right, so this was the lineup for the Royals back in 2010 on the same day. This lineup is real bad. They had Scott Pitsednik, Jason Kendall, David DeJesus, Billy Butler, Jose Guillen, Willie Bloomquist came in to pinch run for the team. Willie Bloomquist came in to pinch run for Jose Guillen, who had the speed of a turtle. Alberto Kiaspo, Mike Avilas, Mitch Meyer, Unieski Betancourt, and Kyle Davies actually pitched that day for the Royals. What in the world were we doing back in 2010? Because that team is terrible. There's not a single person on this team that would play on this year's team.
Not a single person. Pitsednik versus Olivares in left field. Pitsednik wasn't bad that year. He wasn't elite, but he's better than Edward Olivares.
I don't know if there's a single.
Click Pitsednik's numbers. I think in 2010, he was actually pretty good here. He was better than the AAA call-up player. That's probably the only guy. But
I'm sitting here looking at this. David DeJesus hit 318. He was hitting 318 in the middle of June.
I loved David DeJesus. I will defend David DeJesus on this radio show forever. You know my feelings on David DeJesus.
David DeJesus might be the best average Royal. He might be the best at
Mike Avilas is the best average Royal. People love Mike Avilas. People speak very highly of Mike Avilas. He's the best average Royal. Come on now.
Hold on. I'm sitting here trying to look. I'm trying to look to see if David DeJesus ever made an All-Star game.
I don't think he did.
Never made an All-Star game.
I love David
DeJesus.
David
DeJesus is better than Mike Avilas.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. But I think people have higher regard for Mike Avilas than they do David DeJesus.
I don't know if that's the case.
I think if we went over there and grabbed a random, we're at the K tonight, which we're not going to be there, but if we were at the K tonight and we grabbed the random Royals fans and who's better, David DeJesus or Mike Avilas? I think people would be like, you know, DeJesus won so many bad teams, wasn't great at the end. I'd probably say Mike Avilas. I think you'd see more Mike Avilas love than you anticipate.
Text line, let me know, 913-576-7610. I can't believe we stumbled upon a toss-up on who's better, David DeJesus or Mike Avilas. It's clearly David DeJesus. Clearly over Mike Avilas.
I think DeJesus is better, but I think the average.
You think that Avilas is going to win the poll here?
I think Avilas. There's an Avilas. It was about.
He had a high. Mike Avilas had a high.
He had a high. You know why? He had that crazy ass batting stance, and everyone loved
his batting stance. I loved his batting stance. Absolutely loved it. Text line 913-576-7610. We're talking some Royals baseball here. This is a really unfortunate injury for the Royals. It's unfortunate because Benintendi is one of the few offensive players that you feel like the Royals could count on. You know, they don't have that many guys that you feel you can pencil in the lineup every single day and know the kind of at bats and production that you're going to get. Now, I don't want to oversell the injury. He's only on the 10-day disabled list, but I think we know that 10-day disabled list just doesn't really mean a whole lot. And it doesn't typically mean that you're coming back in a week and a half. We're talking about a guy who has a right rib fracture. So maybe he learns to play through it. They put some protective armor on him and he can go out there. But I would count on Benintendi being out for a while. I'd count on him being out for 2 to 3 weeks at a minimum. And maybe by the All-Star break, maybe right after the All-Star break is when we start to have the conversation about Benintendi coming back. This isn't an injury that I think you're out for a few days. You get some rest. You take some Advil. You rub some dirt on it, and you get back on the field. I expect him to be out for a little bit.
The question I think will be, because the injury itself, I agree with you, will be way more in 10 days. It may be All-Star break in name alone. I would imagine, and I'm not a doctor, nor am I a sports therapist or anything of that nature, but I would imagine these 10 days are to figure out pain tolerance. Like, if he can't do everyday average stuff, he's going to be out for a long time because a cracked right rib, that's going to be painful to deal with. But if you work him out and you kind of have him on the treadmill and throw in some things during this homestand and kind of get a feel for how his pain tolerance is, it could be more like 15 days. But you're right. This, on name alone, the surface, a cracked right rib, he's out for a long time. And he was one of the three hitters in this lineup you trusted. Big problems.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is a big problem for the Kansas City Royals. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get into the top stories of the day in Kansas City. I don't know if you guys saw this or not today, but Madden is going to release their cover tomorrow. They gave us a little bit of hint. It is the Two Goats edition. So they put out a picture today. It was a big goat and it was like a baby goat. And there is a rumor circulating the interwebs that the cover is going to be Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady are going to be on the covers of this year's Madden. Now, initially, I'm thinking, wasn't these guys both just on the cover? Like, Brady was on the cover, what, 3 years ago? Mahomes was on the cover 2 years ago? Like, didn't we just do this? But after that, I then was thinking of how I still look at the Madden cover as being one of the cooler things, awards, that you could get as a player. Like, being on the Madden cover is cool. Like, you remember who's on the cover. And now that magazines aren't that big of a thing the way they were when you and I were growing up, Rob, who is on the cover of Madden is sort of a big deal. And then it got me thinking. We have spent a lot of time in Mahomes' early career discussing and debating who his rival is. Whether it's Lamar Jackson, and we tried to make that a thing, or Deshaun Watson, or Baker Mayfield because of the game that they played in college. And I'm sure we'll ask him about 17 times before their week one matchup against the Browns. We've spent a lot of time sort of debating who the rival is for Patrick Mahomes. Isn't the answer Tom Brady? Like, he has not played many memorable games against Deshaun Watson or Baker Mayfield or Lamar Jackson. Sure, you can find one. He certainly had one big game against Lamar Jackson a couple of years ago in Mahomes' first year, the fourth down throw to Tyreek Hill. He's had the big game against Deshaun Watson in the AFC divisional round in which they were down 24-0. I don't think he's had that game against Baker Mayfield. I guess you could say last year, but the biggest moments in the game weren't from Patrick Mahomes because he left with an injury. He hasn't played one of those games against Josh Allen. I know they played the AFC Championship game. That was not a game that anybody outside of the Kansas City area is talking about. Nothing really happened in that game. But he has played those games against Tom Brady. A couple of years ago in the regular season, so Mahomes' first year, I think that was his first pick six of his career. Remember, they got down big early and then they clawed back to make that a game. Then the AFC Championship game. You then fast forward the next season. Bashaud Breeland has that big fourth down stop. And I think that's when a lot of people started to take the Chiefs seriously as a Super Bowl contender. You remember, it was late in the season. I believe it was the first week in December. And it was nobody goes into Foxborough and wins at this stage of the season. It's normally when the Patriots sort of turn it on. They then flex their muscle and they go out there and perform at a high level. Chiefs went on the road and won that game, rode that wave to the Super Bowl. And then last year, Brady and Mahomes played each other in the Super Bowl. I think we're trying to complicate something that doesn't really need to be that complicated. Patrick Mahomes' rival has been Tom Brady so far in his career. Now, we're not sure how much longer that's going to be the case because Brady's on his way out and Mahomes is now just, in theory, coming into his prime. But to me, a rivalry in pro sports is two people of equal standing fighting and competing for the same thing. No one views Mahomes and Lamar Jackson as equals. No one views Mahomes and Deshaun Watson as equals. I know their age is incomparable, but you have to view Mahomes and Brady right now as equals and two people that are both consistently finding themselves fighting for the ultimate prize, whether it's the Super Bowl and or the right to go to the Super Bowl. So, Rob, maybe I'm off in this and maybe we can't do this because Tom Brady was an NFL quarterback back when Mahomes was 5 years old, it feels like, but it feels very forced to me to try to pigeonhole Lamar Jackson or Baker Mayfield or any of these guys as as Mahomes' rival when Brady is just sitting there. And if we're saying is, who's the other player in the NFL that Mahomes has had the greatest back and forth with and has been the greatest quote-unquote roadblock to Mahomes' future success, that person's been Tom Brady. It hasn't been anybody in his era.
I don't think you can call it Brady for this reason. Now, I know Brady wants to play till he's 50, but we all agree he's not going to play till he's 50. Just no way. He's going to be done in, what, 2-3 years? I don't think Mahomes done 2 or 3 years, so it's hard for me to say his rival is a guy who retired 5 or 6 years into his career. For me, Tom Brady's biggest rival is Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning's biggest rival is Tom Brady. I don't think you can say, my first 8 years in the league I had a rival and then didn't have one for the rest of the time. So you made this analogy earlier, and I think it's great. I think Brady is like KU. He looks at Peyton Manning as his rival. That was Missouri. Patrick Mahomes is like Kansas State. He views Tom Brady in Kansas as his rival, but they don't view each other the same way. Tom Brady and Peyton Manning still compete on that Peyton's Places thing and chipping and putting contests. They had the match and all this stuff. They still want to compete all the time with each other. Mahomes and Brady don't have that, and it's not coming because of their age. So I don't think we can call Brady Mahomes' rival.
I get what you're saying. I just think that the rivalry has sort of been, they've found themselves in this place in which they've really been the only competition for each other. Like, outside of, I would say, since Peyton Manning retired, Brady has still played at a really high level. And I would say the only quarterback in teams that have really given Brady's teams fits would be Kansas City. Would be the Chiefs, whether it was with Alex Smith in that 1 year very early on in the season. Remember the week one game in which Alex Smith just went crazy and then Kareem Hunt. The team that has given Brady the biggest problem since Peyton Manning stopped being Peyton Manning has been Kansas City. And it's only heightened when Mahomes got here because you then weren't fighting in the second round of the playoffs. You were fighting in the third round of the playoffs and or the Super Bowl. I think the answer is clearly Brady. Now, we'll see whenever Brady moves on, is another one of these quarterbacks going to emerge? Because you look at right now the AFC, Lamar, Baker, Josh Allen, Trevor Lawrence just got drafted in the AFC. Burrow was the number one overall pick last year. Zach Wilson's in the AFC, Tua. There's a lot of really young, talented quarterbacks that are right now in the AFC. Who's going to be the guy that consistently meets Mahomes in the AFC championship? Who's going to present any level of resistance? The only quarterback and team in the league that's provided any resistance towards Kansas City's dominance over the last couple of years has been Tom Brady. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get to the top story of the day in Kansas City. Le'Veon Bell, he mad. I'll tell you why he's mad next. Keep it locked right here. It's The Drive.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.